Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we're all grappling with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Brad.
What's on our mind this week?
Well, I think like many of us, I'm anxious and preoccupied, and for many obvious reasons, but also for the subtler reasons, which is the upcoming holiday season that we'll be coming into over the next couple of months, and that each year we like to take some time to talk about family relationships and family communication and how to kind of prepare to have more successful holiday gatherings. And I felt like we needed to jump in and have this conversation sooner rather than later this year, because I'm anticipating that we'll probably have more family angst moving into the holidays this year than maybe we've experienced in the past. That's just my guess.
So I
teach family psychology. I've been teaching family psychology at Cal Poly for 15 years, and I've been working with families for almost 30 years, and I've raised a family, and I've been part of a family for all 63 of my years. So I spend quite a bit of time thinking about the dynamics of family systems, maybe more so than others. And it's funny that when you live in a a space, you tend to see the world through the lens of that space, and then you assume that everyone else is having the same thoughts. But I don't know if everyone thinks about the systemic nature of family interactions to the extent that I do on a regular basis. Because we're not really faced with that or taught that we need to think about the systemic interactions or our family culture or the environment in which children raise. We don't really talk about it. We don't teach it in school. It's not part of our reading, writing, and arithmetic. Side note on that, though, in the 1950s, when they rewrote the whole public education system with different goals, one of the goals was to teach the skills necessary for a family to be successful. And so that was the whole home economics portion of education. And it taught how to run the financial part of a family and to, cook healthy meals and to do basic maintenance and yard work. And it also included kind of those parenting skills and how to discipline children. Now, I'd probably be a bit outdated at this point, but there was something really lofty about the idea that we would put into our public education system the skill set necessary to have a whole human experience, a whole adult life. Because now, of course, with all of the focus on STEM and the intensity of, the technology, we've eliminated all of the parts of our public education that actually help enhance the quality of our social emotional lives. But that's for another time. But wouldn't it be spectacular if we talked about the nuances of being a part of a family group, a family system, your family of origin, a nuclear family, however you want to identify it. If we talked about that from a very young age, so that when we had these inevitable disappointments, arguments, discord, potential estrangements, that we would have the tools to navigate them. But instead, where we find ourselves more often than not today is that when families run into trouble, they mirror the cultural narrative and follow what they see. And I would imagine we could all agree that the cultural narrative right now is that when we don't agree, we get rooted on our sides of the argument and then just throw barbs at each other or don't engage at all. And that's really distressing, because no matter what your experience is with family, and we'll talk about that, because there are some family systems and situations that really, unfortunately, are untenable, and there is a need for for discord or for estrangement. I understand that. That's a small percentage, really, of families if we look at them on a whole. But for many, many families, with the tools and understanding of what the whole point of having a family is, we could reduce so much of the vitriol and anger and, you know, taking up of hard sides. But it's unfortunate because our family models tend to mirror what's happening in the bigger cultural story. So it shouldn't surprise you to know that research has seen these sharp divides in families over the last 40 years. Really, a lot of it started after, you know, the mid 1970s with that second wave of feminism and the huge peak in divorces, and it was a revolutionary shift on how people came together and made families. But it's not that we ever had a period of time where all families lived harmoniously in kumbaya.
No, no,
that's not what I'm saying, but there was an element of, this is what you've got, make the best of it, you can't choose your family, sort of attitude that kind of helped hold together these groups of people for better or worse. And it's important that we have a group of people for better or worse, because when we get into the worst part of our life, very few people are going to rush in and really be there for you. And we can talk about forged families and found families and chosen families, and they can be important as well. But when we talk about the nitty-gritty, you've lost it all and no one else will take you in, there are very few organizations, and we've talked a lot about the mental health services that are so severely lacking when someone really is in crisis. So when you get to those really severe moments of being destitute, having mental health issues, you know, needing to have someone in that darkest moment of your life, having some sort of family connections can be your only lifeline. And interestingly, when you read the definition of family in family studies, it talks about a group of people who share intimacy, common tasks, resources, support systems. I'm trying to say off the top of my head, but I don't know them all. And share resources. But nowhere in the definition does it say they love each other.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And so I think that is also important, because that expectation that we have to be madly in love with everyone in our family also is a setup for a lot of disappointment and disagreement and anger. And so in some ways, we might look back at those kind of older models of family systems where people begrudgingly hung out together, which is maybe why when you look at photos from the 1800s, no one's ever smiling in the family photos. That was a joke.
And it was a joke, because you noticed, yeah, that nobody ever smiles in those old
pictures.
But
I think it had to do with the photography methods. But it is very telling, because if you look at those old-timey photos with nobody smiling, you get kind of the sense of what I'm talking about today with it, which is, these are my people.
Yeah, better or worse, these are the ones I'm stuck with.
Right. And I'd like to talk today about how we can maybe start re-envisioning what it is we can expect from our family system, or our family of origin, or our nuclear family, or however you want to describe it, our extended family systems. What is it that we can expect, and how can we maybe alter some of our expectations so that we're not so deeply disappointed that we feel we must flee that family in which we were born into? Because it is tempting to flee when things get hard. It is tempting to flee when we feel hurt. It's tempting to flee when we don't agree with those people we're supposed to be closest to. But your family was never a guarantee that they were going to be the ones you were most like or most wanting to spend time with. The guarantee with the family ultimately was, we're the ones that'll have your back when no one else will. And I may not love hanging out with you, but I'll be there when you need me. And how do we find our way there? Because the level of families that have experienced some sort of estrangement, which means someone is not talking to anyone for years at a time, and they maybe have been told, I cannot be with you because you're toxic to me, I will never speak to you. The level of estrangements is overwhelming right now. And so clearly we're not doing something that's fundamental to help families be more successful. And one of the things that I feel we're not doing, which is fundamental, is set some sort of family mission statement when you start your family or revisit with your extended family. What is it we're all about? What is it that we value? What is it we stand for? Because businesses fail when they fail to have a mission statement. Businesses that have a clear sense of what their goals are succeed. And families need to have that same sort of binding resolution of what is our mission statement? Why are we together as a family? And so then we understand that more than my own personal sense of having my feelings hurt, or even my own sense of what I need to be okay, I, at the end of the day, stand first and foremost behind my family system because I'm part of this group who has created this mission statement and we're in it together. Because there's never been a more important time for coming together and having a sense of community within a family or an extended family. So that's what I want to talk about today, is how can we work with the pieces that we have of our families and try to come together in ways that can be meaningful and helpful and supportive. I will caveat many times over the hour today that there are some hard reasons for some families to be estranged and to not be together. Those who have family members that are abusive or threatening or engaging in illegal activities, those would be considered hard outs. But I will argue that numerically, research shows there are less of those families than there are families with a little bit of encouragement, or maybe a lot of encouragement and a lot of grace and a lot of personal insight and personal responsibility could actually be doing better than they are doing today. So think about your family system. Think about your extended family or your immediate family. Do you have a family mission statement or a motto? What is it that you stand for? Because I'd love to hear what it is. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I will be opening up the phone lines today. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or wherever it is you get podcasts. You can podcast the show to listen at your convenience. And you can also send me a message on Instagram or Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. I have an old photo of my original family of origin, and you can leave us a message there, and I'll be happy to get back to you. So that's where we're going today. I look forward to hearing from you. I look forward to seeing where the conversation takes us. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
The next time we see each other, maybe years and years from now. Family reunion, got to have a family reunion.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're talking about families today. moving into the holiday season, moving into what's already been a difficult time for families to succeed and come together, I want to talk about some ways that you can rethink about, revision, re-envision what your family story is all about. So a little history about family systems and family systems therapy is that the original founders of family systems therapy, like Salvador Mnuchin and Carl Whitaker, if you're kind of a psychotherapy nerd, they originally were looking at families. They started looking at families because they recognize that when we focused our mental health care on the individual, and the individual is the cause for their own discomfort or disordered behaviors or maladaptive relationships, we were really missing a much bigger picture of what impacts individuals on the day-to-day, and that is our experience and our relationships within our families. And so these early pioneers started recognizing that a lot of our neurotic behaviors, like anxiety or depression or responses to anger or melancholy, arose from those interactions that happened in families. And so the early pioneers felt that the real key to success in families was a strong sense of hierarchy, which were parents that were in charge, ran the family, had the vision, and the kids kind of following in step to the parents' model. And if we're to be really honest, they were looking at the men to be the leaders of the family and the wives to kind of fall in line with them and to parent the children. But as family systems therapy kind of advanced, it was more of this hierarchical idea that we really needed parents to be empowered, to be in charge of raising the family. And as we moved into the late 1960s, early 70s, family therapists like Virginia Satir, whom I love, started talking about the feelings that people had being a part of a family and not just kind of this authoritarian, it's my way, the highway, parents are in charge and the kids follow along. She also added the flavor of what does it feel like to be part of that family? How do we help each member of the family develop a good sense of self-esteem and belonging? But the idea of all of those early family systems therapists was that families had to be willing to sit with and deal with hard problems and hard issues and discord and disappointment and anger and not agreeing, because although we're born maybe to the same siblings or to the same parents, we're all very different in the way we see things. So in some ways, we're kind of forced into making relationships with people that might be 180 degrees different than we are. But in those original family therapy, in the work of the original family therapists, they did not talk about dysfunctional families. And that's really a big key to where we are today. The early pioneers didn't recognize that there were dysfunctional families because there was no functional family that was the poster family for how all families should behave. And you can't have dysfunctional families unless you have some model for what perfection looks like. And they recognized that there was no perfection, that they were much more interested in the functioning of the individual families and not the form, you know, that family took. In the 1970s, mid to late 70s, this idea of the dysfunctional family really took hold, and it became kind of the foundation for a lot of therapy for a long time, where people would go in, and if they had discord with the family or, you know, didn't feel supported or had harsh parents, there's this idea that, well, you've got to leave because they're a dysfunctional family. That dysfunctional family is what your problem is. And so the whole almost invention of this model, the dysfunctional family, kind of took hold, and it made it more and more difficult for any families to be successful when there was this overarching, you know, fear or threat that at any time, if the parents misbehaved or things didn't go right, they would be deemed a dysfunctional family, and therapists would then encourage members of the family to split or to take leave because it wasn't a safe place to be. And then, of course, on top of that, you have the largest rise in divorce in the history of this country, right in that late 70s time, as marriages kind of reinvented themselves. And so you had, just by virtue of divorce, a lot of family splits and discord and anger. And so we've never really recovered from that. We've never really kind of found what it is that works for families and how to succeed or how to define, you know, what success looks like in a family. We're still kind of stuck in this idea that the individual is the most important part of the family. And if the individual is not happy or does not agree with what's happening, then they can leave or separate or disengage. And that's really gotten more and more prevalent the more we've attached ourselves to this hyper mental health model of society. I don't know any other way to put it. So I'll caveat again. That does not mean that all families are a safe place to be for all people. And that's really important. Yes, if there is abuse or threatening in families or illegal activities happening, those would not be safe family systems. But if it's a family system that has a lot of arguing and disagreements on the way things go in the world or positions that are on different ways of politics, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a toxic, dysfunctional family that doesn't deserve to exist. And that's really important, that having an argument with someone in the family, having many arguments with someone in the family, does not qualify for then a dissolution of the family system. And that's what I'm talking about today, is that we can create the expectations that our family is different than we idealize. The idyllic family where everyone gets along and they kumbaya and you go on a family road trip and everyone has the best time and you sing songs and play games. I guess some families have that. I don't know many. Road trips especially, right? Whoever gets the hump is probably going to be elbowed the whole way through. You know, there's kind of built into the whole family experience where you are in the birth order, who has most power in the family, right? The whole communication of the family. The whole model of family as it exists is rife with potential conflict. So here's what I'm suggesting. Families need to take an intentional moment to create, one, a family mission statement, two, a family motto, and three, some very simple family rules, and implement that family guideline to give the family, your family, some sort of identity. Because research shows, I'm just going to keep putting my professor hat on, research shows that families who have a strong sense of identity and purpose are more successful. Trying to just wing it does not lead to success. Families, like a good business, have to have an understanding of why we are doing this. First, the people who made the children need to have a mission statement. Why did we do this and why are we doing this? And then as the family grows, to keep revisiting. And Virginia Satir, the early pioneer, said family meetings are essential so that we understand that we're part of something bigger than ourselves, that the family is about the whole unity of the group, and that we come together and we understand what our goals are, how we support each other, even if we don't get along, what are our responsibilities. So to have some intentionality about our mission statement, our motto, and some simple rules gives the family an identity. And then when we're outside of our family at school or with friends or in other situations, we tend to have more resilience. Our kids tend to be less apt to succumb to peer pressure because they belong to something that makes them feel special and important. So the Wise and Born family motto is we show up. And feel free, I'll allow you to borrow it, but it's better to come up with your own. But we definitely are the we show up at odd times, at any time. If someone needs help moving something across the country or there's a dance performance or we try to do great at the holidays, but we actually really thrive and do best at the different things like, oh, someone's having a random dance recital. We can all make it tonight. Let's go. Or someone needs to help out because someone's having a surgery. Oh, I can be there. Let's go. So the we show up part, very important. And then there's just four very simple rules. The first one is always bring a bathing suit.
That's a good one.
I love that.
Yeah.
Everyone should have them with them at all times. You never know when there's going to be an opportunity to be in the water of some kind. So always bring a bathing suit. Take small bites.
Yeah. It's true.
Be safe. Be polite. Use your manners kind of thing. So it's just take small bites. Represent the family, which means wherever you are, you're representing us. And then the fourth and most important, don't be lame.
I like that one. Don't be lame.
It sums it up, right? And if someone is stepping out, it's like, look over, don't be lame. And so we've adopted this kind of foundation of who we are. The kids down to the youngest, who now is 4, all understand the family rules. We'll remember about the bathing suits. My niece is living with me right now. And the other day, she just kind of out of the blue said to me, you know, my boyfriend and I went to the beach last week and he didn't have a bathing suit with him. And I said, you broke the rule. And I said, that makes me feel so good that your first thought is the family rules. So having this gives us a sense of identity that we can all connect to. And the reason that's important, Brad, especially going into the holiday season, but also where we are right now, is that we need to have things that we connect on that have nothing to do with the things we don't agree about.
Boy, isn't that not the truth?
And so that's the goal here in this hour, is to think about the ways that we can connect on things that have nothing to do with the things we disagree about. Because it is easy to disagree. If you gave me 30 seconds, I could think of something that annoys me about every person I'm related to. It's not that hard. We tend to, as human beings, lean into those things that we find annoying. What's more challenging quite often is to think of something that you love and appreciate about every single person that you're related to. So that's number one. How interesting would it be to spend some time making a list of the things that you enjoy and appreciate about everyone who's in your extended or nuclear family system? Because when our energy goes towards the positive, our responses and behaviors tend to follow that. When we already are coming into situations feeling negative, feeling like we're in for a fight, our energy moves towards that. And that's the kind of the essence of the whole experience. So you have to have your mission statement, your motto, your rules, your understanding of who we are, and then start tilting the way you think about the family and find those things that you can connect on. For us, there's the silly traditions, maybe not silly, that's not a fair word, but important traditions and rituals. Having the things that you do as a family regularly help to solidify the identity of the family. So what are your traditions? We're coming into the holiday season, sort of Thanksgiving or other holidays that you might celebrate, Hanukkah, Christmas. Maybe you do something completely different. Notice what is around that, the food that you make, the way that you exchange gifts, the way that you get together. What are the pieces of those traditions that are important to you? Ours revolve around Thanksgiving and Easter. Everything else is fair game. But those two are very important family traditions. And we talk about what we're going to do for both of those holidays for weeks and months in advance. We also have the tradition on the first day of school. No matter how old you are or young you are, if you are going to school, you send a first day of school picture to everyone so they can see that. And then traditions around birthday celebrations. So think about and intentionally write down what those traditions are and ask everyone in the family, what traditions are important to you? What do you like about it? Why is it important to you? Because those traditions then start to give you an identity and something to focus on that has nothing to do with the things that we disagree about. So having traditions and rituals that we do consistently will also start to build that framework of your strong family system. Now, I'm trying not to overload you with information.
That's a lot.
I know. But I just feel anxious, Brad, that I share this, what I know. Because, again, it occurred to me this week when I was teaching and talking about family systems, I'm looking out at my students and kind of their blank stares at me. And I go, because I have lived in this space for so long, I have come to assume that everyone, again, thinks about family in the same way that I do and thinks about the intentionality and thinks about, you know, how it can be different. But it occurred to me that they don't. And when I started this show, the whole goal was to give away everything that I knew about mental health and family. And so it feels really important right now to focus on what I know and can share about successful family interactions. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. More conversation, I think, right now, I feel like it's me talking to you, but I'd love to hear from you as well. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to take your calls and to continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
No, a girl, she puts the color inside of my world. But she's just like a maze, where all of the walls are continually change. And I've done all I can to stand on the steps with my heart in my hand. Now I'm starting to see, maybe it's got nothing to do with me. Fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls, become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers, be good to your daughters too.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And side note about John Mayer, who is singing the song Daughters that we just listened to.
Right.
Yes. He must have a very good sense of family systems therapy, because what he's singing about is that intergenerational passing down of behaviors, right? Fathers, be good to your daughters, because daughters will choose as you do,
yep.
Right? They choose their partners and their spouse based on their relationship with their fathers, as do sons. And we create families in the eyes of the families that we grew up in, sometimes rejecting everything that we saw in our family system, but also oftentimes repeating them. And so it's so helpful to know that when you can repair rifts in families, or recreate or rebuild or rebrand, if we're going to stay in the business model, your family, just by kind of intentionally coming together and say, we want to do things differently. Let's try to engage as a family in a different way. Especially as the older we get and we rely less on our extended family for our own self-esteem or well-being, they become more of that kind of resource and witness to the life that you lived. So the good news is it's never too late to create a family that you're proud to be a part of, or maybe you can tolerate being a part of. I'm okay with that too.
Sure.
I think I'm just trying to lessen the expectation that our family needs to be all things to us at all times for all reasons. And just to lean a little bit back on the classic family systems therapist, Murray Bowen, who I've talked about on the show many times, he recognized that it was too much to expect that one nuclear family, mother, father, and children, to absorb all of the psychic energy for each other. And it was so important that we have relationships with extended family, aunts, cousins, uncles, second cousins, you know, sisters to our grandparents, however we could make those connections. He found that when we can spread our psychic energy around, we tend to put less pressure on those people that are closest to us to meet all of our needs. And part of his argument was that as we moved into these smaller nuclear families, that it was so much intensity that it was hard for the families to succeed, because the expectations that everyone would be perfect was just too much. And so as we think about our family relationships, to spread out our wings and kind of look beyond just our nuclear family and even the immediate extended family, maybe there's some second cousins that you kind of groove on and can get to know or to make relationships. Because at the end of the day, that family system, having people that you're related to that you can lean on, gives you social capital. I mean, in some ways, it's that privileged behavior that people who actually have family ties and connections have a better chance of succeeding and thriving through difficult times. People who have those family connections have someone to go to for resources when they can't find it in institutions or in the government. You know, it's interesting that we kind of moved to what do they call it, a parenting institutionalized framework where we expected the government to be the parents to those who couldn't care for themselves. It's like we kind of gave away the responsibility of the families and said, no, that's okay. We'll just set up systems like social welfare and, you know, different programs to take care of the family members that no one else wants to. I mean, that's pretty new in the history of our culture. But my idea is that if we were to start thinking about how we can go back and recreate the family systems, we'd feel we'd be as a society more whole.
Wouldn't you think, though, Elizabeth, that for some of us, it's just trying to do it better than what we had when we were growing up?
Yes, but just trying to do it better still lacks the intentionality, which is so important in the family units that I'm talking about. So yes, we can desire to do it better, but we have to then have a plan. And it goes to that, what is our mission statement? What are we trying to do? We are coming together to create a family that will be able to care for themselves, you know, independently, to be able to work, to be able to make social connections, to be curious, you know, about life and to be of service to those, to them, to others. You know, you have to, you don't have to, but if you want to have a better chance at doing better than your family of origin, you have to put in that framework of who you actually will be, because we can never succeed when we just say, I just won't do it like that. Mm-hmm. Because when we say, I just won't do it like that, the minute we fall under stress, we will revert to what is familiar because we don't have an actual plan of how we're going to do it differently. So that's why, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, that's why it's so important to have in place that mission statement, those expectations. What are we trying to do here with our group of people? What can we offer for each other? How, you know, what are our expectations for showing up for each other? And to talk about those things. Because again, you might not be best friends with your sisters or aunts or uncles or even parents. You know, you might not want to spend all of your free time together. There is no guarantee that just because you have those blood connections that you get along or agree on anything. But what you might be able to agree on is, hey, I'll be there for you, and here's some ways that I can help. It's like, hey, we may not spend every holiday together, but you can count on me, right? If anything comes up, or if one of your children are in trouble, or you need, you know, some advice or a safe place to stay. Having that framework set up gives the family a sense of structure that actually then can be sustainable. So for a lot of families, this feels daunting because they've already had the rifts, right? They've already had the blowout argument, and now people aren't coming to the holidays, or they don't want to see each other because every time they get together, there's an argument. And rifts are incredibly common. Rifts are so common that there's a lot of bodies of research about how to deal with rifts. So number one, if your family has had a rift or a blowout or an estrangement, you're not alone in that or actually really unique. It's more unique for families to have no conflict at all. I was just trying to imagine if I knew any that I could call on, but no, I cannot.
none that I can think of.
So it's more common to have these rifts or disagreements. What separates, you know, the success of family systems is how we go into and deal with the rifts. So here are some tips. And I say this all the time, that the key to a successful life is being able to take personal responsibility for your actions and behaviors. And when we can get to a place where we are taking personal responsibility for our actions and behaviors, it makes us much more open and available for healing rifts. And again, you can't change other people. They might not be in a place of being emotionally responsible or personally responsible and ready to do that, but you can only control yourself and keep making attempts. So number one, if you'd like to mend fences, stop trying to rehash the past arguments. You're never going to get the other person to change their mind or perspective. And if you're waiting for them to change their mind for you to engage, that's not going to happen. And number two, Don't wait around for someone to apologize. That drives me nuts. I'm not going to talk to them unless they apologize to me. Don't wait for that, because at the end of the day, you have to keep your mind, your focus on the bigger picture, which is we all need a group. We all need a place for refuge when things get tough. And on a bonus day, we might actually have some fun together. Number two, think about what is the least you can accept in that relationship with another person. And that might sound really minimizing, but what a healthier way to go in than expecting a relationship to be kind of your idealized version of what a sister or a parent or a cousin might be. Because when we have idealized versions, then all we can do is get disappointed. So what is the least you can accept in that relationship? You know, are you willing to see each other during limited times or just on this holiday or maybe in just a controlled event? We'll meet up at the, you know, niece's dance performance and be cordial. Like how minimal can you have contact with this person and still feel like that relationship works? Number three. If you want to repair a rift, you need to reach out periodically. Because so often I'll hear people say, well, I called and they didn't answer and that's it. Or I left an email or I went by their house and that's it. That's all I'm going to do. That's not a successful strategy. If you want to repair it really, if you want to start mending those relationships to have a sense of belonging to something greater than yourself, and again, it doesn't mean you're all going to wear the same pajamas on Christmas morning, but it means you do have a social support network that you know you can call on in times of need. That's what I'm talking about, the minimal, having someone you can call in a time of need. So reach out periodically. Because you never know when someone else's perception has changed or their situation has changed or their anger has dissipated. And you might find that moment where there's an opening. So make more efforts to reach out and have a reason to bridge that. Hey, I just wanted to share this with you. Or I saw this poem. It made me think of you. Or, oh, remember, you know, we had this time over the summer when we were kids. Have something to reach out periodically that becomes a bridge. Number three, maybe it's really tough to be with someone because they're really challenging to be around because they're judgy or say things that hurt your feelings. And so you might want to make a deal and say, you know what? I do want to be part of our social system, but I don't want you to criticize my parenting choices. Right? I'd love to have you come and stay, but please don't come in the kitchen and start moving all of my appliances around. It's okay to set, and I'm hesitant to use the word boundaries because it's been so overused and abused that it doesn't mean much anymore. But it's okay to set guidelines or expectations. Say, hey, I will feel really comfortable hanging out with you, but I'd really appreciate it if you just, you know, hold back on the criticisms. But please don't say you can come for Thanksgiving, but don't mention politics. Because as soon as you say don't mention politics, it's like a Tourette's thing. That's all the person's going to want to do.
Yeah,
is mention politics. Our number is 805-781-3875. What's going on with your family? Do you have a family motto? So I've given you 45 minutes to think about it. And my new intern, Isabel's here. Hello, Isabel. Can you think of what your family motto might be?
Isabel, would you like to come over and think about what your family motto might be?
Are you deflecting, Brad?
Oh, my family motto? Oh, I thought you were talking about Isabel.
Well, I was going to try to get both of you to.
Oh, my family motto is to, you know, we haven't thought a lot about it because I think our goal between my wife and myself was just to have a better life than, you know, for our kids as a family unit than what we had growing up because we're both children of alcoholic parents. Mm-hmm. But that's not, as you said, that's not really a
it's not a plan. Yeah.
So I'm kind of at a loss because both of my kids, you know, are 40 and 38. So it's how do we get everybody to sit down at this stage of the game and say, okay, guys, here's our motto, you know, when we can't agree on, you know, we don't agree on anything. And I think we do a pretty good job of kind of seeing past that as a group. I think that's one thing in our in our favor is that we're able to kind of see past some of the differences that have emerged as they become adults in their own right.
So then wouldn't your motto be, we are the family that agrees to disagree?
Ooh, I like that. I like that one a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
You may have it.
I'm going to write it down and take it home with me.
And
you know?
I really am a fan of a sampler, right? The needlepoint is like,
yeah, really?
I love a sampler just over the door. We are the family that agrees to disagree. Or one of my former clients, they did, I love wood burning, mm-hmm. right? Remember the old wood burning when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
And they have their family motto, wood burnt on a beautiful piece of wood hanging over the wall. Get that family motto, put it somewhere so that you see it regularly. And then you want to start thinking about some of those family rules, kind of things that will stand by, you know? And yours might be always bring a guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there are some family rules. Be respectful. I mean, it's okay to disagree, but, you know, you have to, and you use the word boundary, but I had to establish some guidelines for us as well, especially as the kids got older, is we're here to help you with your problems, but we're not here to be, have them dumped on us and have your, you know, have your issues or anger taken out on us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here. That's not what we're here for,
yes.
But we're here to help you not suffer any of the offset anger and frustration that you might feel.
See, I'm hearing some kind of simple rules, right? We are not your emotional garbage receptacles.
Right.
Having those four and again, writing those down are also key.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, turn it back on. Okay. we're doing some training here in the studio today, so there's a little behind the scenes.
Everyone's mesmerized by
We have quite a crew here available.
We do.
And we're screening a call for you here in just a moment.
Thank you. I know. And you're speaking to my new intern, Isabel. Our number is 805-781-3875. All right. So some other tips. When we have those family rifts, or we think we've cut somebody off, or you're sitting there listening to me talking and thinking, well, I don't want to talk to them anymore. Anyways, they're worse than anyone could ever imagine. It's not worth my time to reach out and try to fix it. But one of the dirty little secrets about rifts and estrangements is that even though they might be physically absent from your life, when we have these really negative experiences, those relationships continue to be psychologically present. So although we might stop speaking to a close family member, they're still in our thoughts. And we tend to ruminate on those rifts we had. There's little peace in our life when we ruminate over the ways that we feel like we were wronged or someone was disrespectful or wasn't able to work with us. In the bigger picture of things, we're almost better off healing the rifts so that we can alleviate that ruminating and that stress that we feel trying to hang on to the rifts that we have. Our number is 805-781-3875, and this is my sister Katie calling. Are you ready to give me some more rules and mottos?
Oh, I just wanted to call and give appreciation because I think it's fun that you put together the Thanksgiving and Easter every year, and I think it's always a super busy time for you, but you don't make the excuse. I think it's just like being a parent or having a family. You have to prioritize and be a leader and say, this is what we're going to do. And sometimes people protest. It's like
yes,
me when
do.
I force us to make family photos and everyone says, no, just one photo. And I'm like, we got to get the family photo.
It's true.
And you just have to put your foot down. So it's like Thanksgiving, Easter, appreciating you. And sometimes being a family or being a parent, you have to kind of have people get mad at you, but then they're usually happy that you made it happen. So,
I agree.
Thank you.
And you know what? I was going to start the show today by saying my sister Katie and I are the leaders of our family, and we're not always popular because leaders are not always popular. But somebody has to be willing to, right, hold it together, because at the end of the day, we're doing this for our grandchildren, right? And our children, our grandchildren, for the future generations, almost more so than for ourselves. We're kind of holding these hard lines for their experiences of togetherness as they get older, when you and I aren't here.
Well, I think it's encouragement for everyone too, because as parents, you often feel like, wow, I'm putting my foot down in this situation, or I'm making this happen. And then the kids get mad at you, but that's your job. I mean, they need to rebel against you, mm-hmm. and you need to set some boundaries, but they know in the end we all love each other, and we're there, we're a foundation. So,
and it wouldn't be
you appreciation.
Thank you, sister. And it wouldn't be a family experience if there wasn't some teen or early preteen grumbling in the corner about it. I mean, to me, that's just part of the event. Thanks for calling.
We used to have a whiner award.
Yes. Oh my gosh, we did. We had a family trophy, which was a little baby on a piece of marble.
Thanks to our mom.
Yes, thanks to my mom for finding it. And it's called the whiner award. And so anyone who is most pain in the butt over the holiday would win the award. But it backfired when my daughter cried because she did not get the whiner award 1 year.
I yes. I thought that would like be an automatic qualification for the award.
For complaining about not winning the
yeah,
award?
Sure.
I know. Oh, thank you for that reminder. Thanks for calling in, sister.
I think it is like everybody, you might let your relatives vent. Everybody takes turns, but in the end, we still love each other and we get a laugh.
Yes.
All right. Have a great day, you guys. Thanks for the great show.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. That was nice. My sister's never called in before, I don't think.
Yeah, and it was a good topic for her to call in on, too, you know, because something she knows intimately with you, and it's a great topic, too.
Well, and, you know, our family is not rift-free, and I think that's one of the reasons why studying family has been so important to me. And I always tell people, you don't become a family therapist or work in this field unless you've had some experience that kind of draws you into wanting to know how to fix it or heal it. And so, yes, our family has had its challenges like a lot of families, but what has been very healing for us, and it's why I wanted to share it with you, is that we think of ourselves larger than the immediate, whatever the gripes are, or, you know, whatever the conflict is, or whatever the thing is that we're not agreement about, that our family is bigger than all those individual grievances, and that we try to stay focused on kind of that bigger picture of who we are and what we're trying to provide. I want to be a safe space for my nieces and nephews and my grandchildren. I want my home and my husband and I to be a safe space. So although they might gripe about, you know, having to do an Easter egg hunt every year and, you know, get up and perform at the Thanksgiving dinner, they also know that I am steadfastly on their side. But if we don't have those times to get together, you know, kind of forced togetherness, they wouldn't have an opportunity to create a relationship with me either. So there's kind of that dilemma of, oh my gosh, we have to get together with the whole family and it's stressful and some people are grumpy or don't want to do the same thing. But if we just blow up and give up on the family gatherings, then we don't have a way to connect with each other. We don't have these memories or ties. And again, some of our most funny memories or important memories are not when things went great. It's when things, right? Yeah. The turkey got burned or the power went off or
when a mishap happens. And you know, the one thing I can pass along to that I, from my own personal experience, is be careful of those rifts as a parent, because mm-hmm. you pass those along to your children.
Yes.
And I take it from personal experience. There are relationships I've been finding very difficult to repair and reclaim that were broken years ago with my parents and members of my family. And just because of that, that rift has existed even after they've been gone. And it's been very difficult to try to make those connections. So if you want your children to have some connectivity to their family and their extended family, that's, in my opinion, that's something definitely to keep in mind if you are looking out for your kids to
yes.
give them a good experience.
Well, that was very prescient, Brad, because that is very much the family systems model, is that we have to, as parents, live the life that we would be happy that our children would model, because they are going to model it. And so if things haven't gone the way you'd like, it behooves us to change our relationships so that we can model a healthier way to be. And so in the last couple minutes, I just want to throw out a couple other things about these rifts or what we're focusing on. One, think about the motto and the rules, because it can be kind of fun, and they should be in some ways a little fun or lighthearted, the family rules, because people are more apt to follow them when they're something kind of funny. But a couple other things to remember is that if you have conflict in your family relationships that you can't seem to let go of, you might want to look at your other relationships, because the sense is if we're having conflicts in one place, we tend to have conflicts in other places. And so to start taking that personal responsibility of what can I do differently to make things better? Because again, we can't expect anyone else to change for us. We can only change our behaviors and our perceptions about what are happening. So instead of going into family situations with a perception that everyone's negative or doesn't get along or it's going to be horrible, go in with the perception of we're all kind of anxious and doing our best and wanting to love each other and trying to figure out how to do it. Changing that perception and changing your behavior of being more open and gracious can actually open up to other people feeling safer and wanting to be vulnerable and gracious with you as well. And then finally, when you get to that point where you realize that being a part of this group gives you a sense of wholeness and identity, once you can feel that moment of, I belong to something greater than myself, you'll recognize how it's so important and beautiful to preserve it with everything you've got, in spite of some times where your feelings might be hurt, or you might not like what happened, or you might not like what was served. If you can remember that it's about things bigger than your moments of comfort, you're going to experience a sense of connectiveness that's life-changing.
Wow. Now, you're all of a sudden, you're making me want to make a bunch of phone calls.
Okay, I hope so. That's the goal.
You really are.
Reach out often. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can post a message on Facebook or Instagram. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast the show. Share with your friends. But as always, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a part of our community and for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
You know that ain't John.
We at the family reunion, telling jokes and playing spades. Uncle Dave is on the barbecue grill. Grandma bragging about the blanket she made for the new baby.